Welcome to another edition of the official catch up. It's me, Ben, joined as ever by Mr. Chris Bow. Chris, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad. I typically say that, to be honest. It's been a busy week in non-league. I'm sure there's a lot to talk about, a lot of interested people going to be listening today, I think, of what we have to say on everything that's went on. It's never dull, as I say, in non-league, has it, Ben?
That's it. We've got all the fun of the fair. We've got the managerial merry-go-round, and then the circus is leaving town. So plenty to talk about. I set that one up. That was great. You must admit, people. You must admit that was well planned. I'd sat before we came in there, planned that one up. But yeah, no. I think we probably can caveat everything we've said in the last few weeks with a week's a long time in football, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. I just couldn't believe it. Like every day. There seemed to be something going on. Like every day last week, it was just mental. And I'm trying to keep up with it. And then some of them were not surprising, I guess. And then other things just came out of nowhere, out of the blue. We heard obviously different things as well. And then it comes out that what we heard probably wasn't true. And then it's like, what's going on? Honestly, it's been a mad, mad week.
I think some of the stuff we talked about last week, obviously,
yep.
If people are listening here and haven't listened to previous episodes and they're coming here fresh, we're obviously talking about the situation, firstly, at Broomhill. There's obviously been a change there at Open Goal Broom. There will be a change coming there. Kevin Rutkiewicz has left East Kilbride. Morris Ross has left Cowdenbeath. Plenty for us to talk about, but we all start, as we always do, with the matches that took place over the weekend. And we'll start where we always start, the Lowland League. There was a small card of fixtures in the Lowland League. I'm not too sure why, Chris. Why was it only like four games, you know?
Cup games.
Yeah, one of the cups in the East has obviously affected the teams playing in the Lowland League. So we've only got four games. That was Silver Strollers 2, Cali Braves 0, Dalbeattie Star 1, Bowness United 7, East Dillonshire 0, Cowdenbeath 0, and Dunmore Unis 1, East Kilbride 6. Let's start with Civil and Cali Braves, Chris. 2-0 win for Civil. Decent result on our team in that middle of the park, just kind of ticking down the season.
Yeah, I did hear the disappointment, obviously, of Cali Braves losing that because they're kind of in a similar boat where they're kind of pushing for the top six. I think I got someone asked the question of whether like the top four, albeit the top six because of the B teams, would get into essentially the League Cup, or I don't even know what the name of it's called now. But
Trust Trophy, whatever it's called.
They do. So there is still a bit to play for in that respect. Obviously, it's looking like probably Spartans, Trenentin, Stirling Uni are the three teams, but the fourth team to get in there could, you know, it's a bit of money for them at the start of the season. Obviously, the chance to play some SPFL sides or everyone's favourite B team. So, interesting one that.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realise that was a thing. I just assumed they'd be the top four teams. But forgetting Rangers and Celtic B will be playing in that anyway.
Yeah,
part
yeah.
of the how it's set up. So, yeah, I guess for East Kilbride, Berwick, Civil, still something to play for. In that regard, so that's decent. I just assumed that from kind of 6 down to 17, the season was almost over for most of those teams, and certainly felt like that was the case for the likes of East Kilbride, who we'll come on to, I'm sure, in due course. Other game then, Dalbeattie Star 1, Bowness United 7, thumping for Dalbeattie Star, a sore one for them to take. Great result for Bowness. Getting 7 there. They're obviously trying to keep in top or get close to those teams just slightly above them. But Dalbeattie again, struggling. Seems like every week. I just don't see where it's going to turn for Dalbeattie. And I think they're looking, it's like it's going to be difficult for them now.
Yeah, so it's kind of a boost on the kind of brighter side of managerial changes. Obviously, Ian Little was appointed, the boss of Bowness, which it wasn't surprising. I think it was an easy pick, obviously, coming in as Max Christie's assistant. Ian Little knows the league very well, experience. To me, it was an obvious choice that he would come in and obviously take over there. And it's worked wonders, his first game, albeit against a struggling Dalbeattie side. I'm sick of saying it, but it all comes to that game against Edinburgh Uni, which I'm hopefully getting along to, so I'll see for myself. because out of all the teams, I guess I've not really seen much of Dalbeattie or Edinburgh Uni as much in terms of even highlights or whatever else. So I'll be looking forward to that game. I'm sure it'll be fiery. I'm sure it'll be all guns blazing from both sides. Winner takes all types of stuff. But Bo'ness are a funny one. I mean, on paper, they're a really, really decent team. I think they're just lacking consistency this season in terms of the results. They've had a few players missing, but I guess we can say that about a lot of teams, so it's not really an excuse, I guess. But it's a cracking result for Bo'ness, but they do have some quality players. It's whether they can sort of keep hold of them next season and whether they can push forward under Ian Little. I'm not 100% sure what will happen there, but they're obviously one of the former East Junior teams that have came in there, and you expect them to probably at least be top half if based on their quality and their history.
Yeah, they also have come into the league in the last couple of years. Probably still find their feet a wee bit in the Lowland League. They had a decent enough season last year, certainly, but by no means a team that are never going to challenge. I think they probably find their feet a bit more, keep adding to the squad, and they'll do well enough, I think, Bo'ness in due course. Obviously, the Lowland League's only going to get tougher, we expect. But, that's East Scotland teams are. The West teams, or maybe even the South of Scotland teams coming up that are going to be capable and add to the league. But certainly, Bo'ness are not a team that are going to disgrace themselves, I think, in this division. That's for sure. Next one then, East Lancashire 0, Cowdenbeath 0. Not a lot of talk about there. Both teams down the bottom end. Not really doing an awful lot. Struggling, both teams. We can come on to Cowdenbeath probably more so, Chris. Maurice Ross has departed before the end of the season.
Yeah, I guess we could probably do that because there's probably a bit more to cover in terms of East Kilbride and Broomhill. So I think there's not a lot to say on Maurice Ross. It came as a shock to me. I mean, we've praised them defensively, but the last few games have been not great in terms of conceding goals. And I don't know. My issue is it was probably less a club point of view. I think obviously Maurice Ross probably just didn't see how it was going to go forward, and I think that's a fair point if that's what his decision was, to resign or whatever. Because I don't think there's anyone that I can think of that's free in terms of managers that could go in and do a better job than Maurice Ross. I mean, could Cowdenbeath potentially be higher in the league? Yes, I think so. And certainly defensively, they've shown that they're half decent. I just think they're missing a couple of things, but in terms of competing, I think it's always going to be tough for Cowdenbeath. The last few years at Cowdenbeath, they've just, in fact, even longer than the last few years, they've just slid down the leagues. I think there's the culture at the club has to change in terms of mentality, because you know they were down in League Two for many seasons, just not that engaged in terms of trying to get results. I think the objective was not to be relegated. So it's hard to get that mentality as a club. But when you come down a league and you still have that mentality, we've seen them at Cowdenbeath. They went from, the Championship down to the Lone League in, a few years. And it's been a massive decline. And what has to change there, if it's investment, management, players, I'm not 100% sure. It's a difficult one for Cowdenbeath to... but certainly, I would say a culture has to change. You have to want to try and push yourselves, and certainly I think Cowdenbeath might have that in them, but whether they can do it or not, I'm not 100% sure. As I say, I'm not confident that there's going to be a manager that can probably do better than Maurice Ross at this time, based on everything in terms of probably their finances, I'm guessing there, I guess. But it's a difficult one for Cowdenbeath. I don't think they're going to be on the complete slide. I don't think they'll be anywhere near the bottom going into next season. But I mean, even looking now, they're kind of near the bottom, I suppose. But I what I mean by that is I don't fear relegation for them in the next few years. But you know, it's Cowdenbeath, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think the thing that I think that surprises me more is the timing around Maurice Ross's exit. I'd assumed he'd have went to the end of the season there. Don't understand why he leaves with, five or six games left of the season, to be honest. You could see, I think, at the start of the season where they really struggled, and you could have maybe seen him leaving at that point if he didn't really believe in what was happening or be able to do anything more. They did improve a little bit from where they were at the beginning.
Yeah.
Not by great shakes. I would have said, you're sitting there, you're not worried about them kind of getting relegated. I have a different view on that, Chris, to be honest. I think there's a couple of teams that I look at that and say that Cowdenbeath could be one of those teams that could be down the bottom of that division. We know where we're at with Dalbeattie and Edinburgh Uni, but I think come next season, that Dalbeattie, if they stay up, could turn around and become a different side. And they've been there before and been up further up the division previously. So for me, I think Cowdenbeath, if you're a Cowdenbeath fan, you'd be worried, because you say that decline has been quite rapid and they've always been in that position of kind of trying to stave off relegation, trying to just be a bit of a middle-of-the-road club. I don't really know what that can be like as a fan at this level, if you're just kind of sitting toiling and trying to make sure you stay up or maybe get a cup run every year. That doesn't seem like enjoyable from the fan perspective. But they need to do something different. Going out and get a manager will be obviously the first thing. Who can come in there right now? I'm not too sure. I don't see, as you say, a lot of people that will be potentially jumping at that role. You look, obviously, East Kilbride will come on to just shortly, but it's going to be the same kind of people you'd think that are going to be going for that job, for both those jobs, or be in the frame for those jobs. Certainly, I would have thought, and if you're getting a choice over East Kilbride or Cowdenbeath, you're going to be going to East Kilbride all day long. You're probably going to be looking at some of the West of Scotland jobs perhaps as well, or maybe East of Scotland jobs that can come up. Who knows what will happen in the summer, but I don't think there'll be anybody rushing to take the Cowdenbeath job. It maybe needs to be one of these situations where you kind of think outside the box and go for something. Take a bit of a gamble on someone who's got the skills, got maybe, I'm going to compare people to, I guess, teams in a team in France. You look at the guy, was it Will Still at Reims?
Yeah.
Just a pure out-the-box appointment. And obviously doing great guns in France for them. So maybe need something like that that's just totally left field and see if they can just change the whole system and the team and rebuild and try and get themselves up the table.
Yeah.
Look at the teams that may be coming up. They're obviously well backed financially and we know that the money side of things is going to be important in this league nowadays. That and all the tiers within Scottish football as well. That's no different. So I think Cowdenbeath are going to be in for a bit of a struggle, personally, over the next year or two.
Keep your expectations low and you'll never be disappointed, as they say.
It's quite a philosophical way of looking at it, Chris. I like it. But philosophy on this Sunday morning as we record.
Personal reflection day.
That's it, absolutely. And we'll move on then to the final game of the week, and that was Edinburgh Uni 1, East Kilbride 6, as I alluded to at the start of the podcast. East Kilbride parted company, or Kevin Rook has left the club on Friday night. So I guess to set the scene for a lot of people, East Kilbride have been struggling quite a bit. They started off the season pretty well. Looked like they could be very capable and be at the top. Chris has tipped them to be top of the league for the last 5 years running or something like that. So he's still struggling to get that one right, and today is not going to be the day. East Kilbride were still in the South Challenge Cup as of this time last week when we recorded the podcast, because Auchinleck Talbot had fielded an ineligible player, and then they appealed that and got reinstated in the competition. So East Kilbride were removed from the South Challenge Cup. So at that point, pretty much East Kilbride's season was about done as far as they were concerned. Chris just mentioned earlier on about the place and the SPFL Trust Trophy, whatever it's called. However, that's part of the league. But the form has been poor. They played Hearts B on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, or midweek certainly, and lost 4-1. Kev Rogovic had post-match interview. They just felt like a manager who was devoid of ideas, didn't know where to go next, and had been kind of saying the same stuff week in, week out on those post-match interviews. And you just felt that time was running out. Whether the news about them getting booted out of the cup because of the reinstatement of Auchinleck Talbot, it was probably the right time for Kev to leave the job. Are we surprised, Chris?
No, not really. When I saw that result midweek, I was thinking that was curtains. But I think one thing you've not mentioned there is obviously I think there was a team meeting or something. It's been leaked online that what was said, obviously, you know, Kev's been angry at the players because of the high wages they're on and youth players thinking they've made it. Obviously, Pedge, who's what number one source, I guess, in that sort of thing.
He is.
Came back with a vengeance.
Fabrizio Romano of non-league football, isn't he?
So yeah, I trust his. he's always seems on the ball. He obviously has a fair decent few sources, but I think that's disappointing that was leaked. And I think even before, I don't know if that had anything to do with him being sacked. Obviously, that being released doesn't look great. I mean, EK do not have a really good record of keeping managers. I mean, even ones that have been successful. So. But yeah, at the end of the day, the results have not been good enough. I obviously tip them to be top or certainly near the top. And yeah, it's been disappointing because they do have a decent team there. And I guess the biggest issue I've had all season, and I've mentioned different things on the podcast, is the tactics. I mean, they're just not the East Kilbride we've been watching over the last few years in terms of entertaining football. They lost a lot in terms of getting rid of your Barry Russells, your Sean Winters. They lost the core of that club, I guess. So it was, I think that was before Kev, to be fair, but that was always a risky move. I mean, you want players that want to play for the badge. A lot of these guys coming in, I'm not saying they aren't, but certainly you do think, why are they coming down to East Kilbride? Is it money? Is it because they actually care about East Kilbride? I don't think so. I think it's more about the money. And obviously that's where Kev's had issues. But in terms of the tactics, it's not been great. Someone commented, it's like, you've mentioned everything wrong with East Kilbride and you've not really seen them this season. It's like, we watch everything. We watch highlights when they're available and you can just tell. I mean, it's like I keep saying, you only need eyes to see. And I mean, I'm probably that confident in my knowledge of non-league that there's probably a team I could kind of call it without even seeing a team these days, because I've covered the league or lone league for that long that it's not hard for me to do in terms of, you know, seeing players or managers or whatever. So, but yeah, Kev, look, I feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for Bill. You know, you don't want to see managers get sacked, and we're never hopefully perceived as calling for their heads or anything. We're only critical from what we see. But my big worry there for East Kilbride is, do they bring in another sort of bigger name that's played in that's managed in the SPFL and it just doesn't work out and we get this manager merry-go-round again and again and again year after year? Because I think they've got a guy there that took them on Saturday, Martin Fellows, and I think he should get a chance to be manager because he is East Kilbride through and through. He was the kit man, what, 6-7 years ago? He works for the Scotland youth teams. Mark McKenna, he's going to hate me because I'm going to forget his title, but what, performance manager for Scotland national team and stuff like that. So these guys know their stuff and they're East Kilbride through and through. I would give them the job, not just until end of the season. I would take a run with them. Like, whether either of them can really commit to that because of their obligations to the national team or the youth teams, I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, they would be my call. I wouldn't want a big name. These guys are East Kilbride through and through, and I'd give them a chance. But the higher-ups, I mean, we've talked about Chris Aitken not getting a chance, and they wanted Kev Rukovic and getting him out before the cup final and all this sort of nonsense. It wasn't great for them. It would have been interesting to see where they would have been if Chris Aitken was in charge this season, but we'll never know.
I'm glad they never got him, that's for sure. I can say that with honesty. I'm glad we're at now, and thanks to these Kilbride both for not giving Chris a job, because we wouldn't have been able to get a manager of his calibre in February if it wasn't for them. So big shout out to those guys. But I think, going back to some of the points you made, Chris, on Martin Fellows, I think that's a great shout. Personally, he's got the qualifications, he's got the experience and the, I guess, the new ways of football. I think, if a way to describe Martin, he's probably in that category of people that you want to take a chance on. I think I mentioned it there earlier about Cowdenbeath and looking to find someone. That's probably similar for East Kilbride. If they go for a guy like Martin, I think that would be
a popular choice.
Yeah, I think so, and I think he would, and maybe that's what he needs, and maybe that stability as well would be something that would help. I think Martin's going to be in there, he knows the players, he'll know what they need right now, plus I think he can definitely build going forward. You mentioned his commitments elsewhere. He obviously got a good role there within the SFA and the Scotland setup. But I think Martin will want to be his own person at some point. Personally, I don't know him that well, but I know enough about his football and what he's done so far. And I think he'll be someone that will want to make his way and become probably a full-time manager at some point. And an East Coast Boys player, a good starting point. He knows the club well. Like you say, he's going to be more than capable. He's done well with the 20s. I think previously he's been in there too. So he'll know that crop of players coming through at East Kilbride, and there'll be some guys in there that'll be very capable and stepping up into that first team, no doubt about it. But I think the thing that sticks out for me a lot of time East Kilbride is the turnover of players. There seems like a lot of turnover of players year on year. And that can be helpful in a lot of situations. I think they probably need to find a core group of guys. And they have obviously some guys that have been around for a few years, but are they going to be looking at maybe moving on now? They may be fed up of being at East Kilbride and going through that same scenario of getting to partway through the season and not getting to where they want to be, change a manager year on year. So it's a difficult one for East Kilbride. Just playing devil's advocate, if they don't give it to Martin Fellows, who do you think comes in, Chris?
Stephen Swift, I would say. I mean, there's rumours, obviously, that, you know, Mick Kennedy, Si might, you know, go from Darvo, I guess. We'll talk about them soon, I guess. But, you know, they might want the East Kilbride job. But the issue I have with East Kilbride is, I don't know if the culture is quite there yet, the club culture, in the sense that it's a bit of a weird mix in terms of these young guys coming into the first team, maybe not got experience, but then they're playing with guys that are obviously on high wages. So there's no middle in terms of the squad. And sometimes that's a wee bit dangerous at club, because you've got these young guys, oh, I wish I could be, you know, Alan Lithgow, because he's earning however much he's earning, you know. So it's like you're missing the middle part. You've got your high earners and low earners, and you don't have a middle, I would say. And one thing that concerns me about East Kilbride is obviously they've got money. They've been pumping in money for years, and you've got to wonder, when does that run out? I mean, surely they can't keep, putting money in the club. We talk about how hard it is to run clubs or whatever. You know, yourself, Ben, being involved in Kilwinning, I guess, and I do question that, like, how long can they pump money in terms of trying to go for, you know, winning leagues and going promotion to the SPFL? Because I don't think you've got forever. You know, there's no one with unlimited resources, and I guess it gets more and more expensive every year because of, you know, what happened with lockdown, and then, yeah, a lot of people don't have as much, so you're probably losing fans as well on a weekly basis, I guess, if you don't have as much money because of the financial crisis everyone's facing. So I don't know. They're questions that I would be concerned about with East Kilbride as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be sustainable. I think that's the important bit. At some point, you can't be firing the dough in week in or month to month. And we've obviously seen it. They've been able to buy some players and bring guys in that are coming from a much higher level. And you always question, why is he going to East Kilbride? I think that's definitely something that we see when we sign. I think you can just take an example of the boy Kyle Connell, who signed a couple of months back. I think he's playing League One up until January, and he's ended up at East Kilbride, which he may have his own reasons for signing, but as an example of a player that you go at, you could be playing at a much higher level, and wouldn't surprise me certainly if some of these guys maybe are looking to go back up at some point and maybe thinking to themselves, is there any point being at East Kilbride? There is the guys there that are involved and have been for a few years, and they'll probably stick around, you'd assume, but if they don't, they need to wrap it up and start again and try and find a new approach, because whatever they're doing there now doesn't seem to be working. I asked you there, who do you think would be a good fit for the role? You said Stephen Swift. I think that's a good shout. It's Stephen Swift, however, is now at Clyde, assistant manager to Jim Duffy. So maybe he's content in being the assistant there. And but yeah, I think you mentioned Mick and, well, Si, well, we're also going to cover that just shortly. But I'm unsure about that one personally. I think, is Mick going to be looking for a move?
I'm not sure either.
I'm not convinced that's a thing. I think that's some sort of rhetoric that's getting pushed out every now and again about Mick, whether it was the Pollock job, the Stenny job, maybe even the Clyde job at one point. There was always kind of tedious links to these roles, these jobs for Mick. But I don't see anything, certainly, or hear anything particular about Mick wanting to move out of Danville. I think he's invested in the project there, and certainly one that he's wanting to take them up. I mean, they're probably not going to go up this year again. That's their situation. I guess we can talk about Darvel probably in more detail later on, but that's not going to be sustainable, that project, forever for me. So maybe a move to East Kilbride maybe suits Mick. Would he want to work with the board at East Kilbride? I'm not too sure. But who knows? It would be a decent move. Other than that, is there a candidate that would stick out for me? I'm going to say it. Maybe Chris Strain, someone like that. He's doing well at Beath. I know East Kilbride have been interested in him in the past. Is it possible that he moves there? Potentially. Yeah, I think it's probably a move for him. Just on Chris, is he a big enough name? Probably not, if that's what East Kilbride are looking for. We always wonder about East Kilbride looking for a big name. Kev Rukovic certainly would be a class as a big name because he'd played at a decently high level in Scottish football and stuff like that. But yeah, not too sure. You've got a name for us, Chris. What you got?
Yeah, I'll throw in another one. Mentioning Darvel, I thought this, as we'll get into, obviously it's reported that, you know, more coaches are coming into Darvel. We'll talk about it probably next. But does Craig McEwen return to management now that it's kind of like he's probably, what, third, going down to third choice at Darvel, in my opinion? So does he make the jump back up to being the top job or whatever?
I'm surprised. I mean, I'm absolutely surprised that Craig McEwen is his assistant manager anywhere, personally. Yeah. He's more than capable of being his own person. I'm surprised he hasn't went for some of the jobs that have been up, the Pollock job. Surprised not to see his name in for the Coen Rangers job twice, personally. But seems to obviously be enjoying life at Darvel, as I understand. He's assistant to Mick. He's obviously a good assistant manager to have, but yeah, I mean, he's possible. But again, go back to the point I just made about big names. Is Craig McEwen a big name for East Kilbride? Probably not. He's a very capable manager, by all means. Probably doesn't know the Lone League all that well, personally. I don't think he fits East Kilbride for me. I think Craig's probably more going to be a kind of guy that would be looking at some of the bigger jobs within the West of Scotland. Personally, I thought potentially Craig McEwen to Irvine Meadow would have been a move that I'd have seen happen, but they've took on Kev Deeney for the foreseeable, gave him a longer term contract after they took an interim charge and got them up the league. So yeah, I mean it's possible. Whether he applies, not too sure. East Kilbride probably a team that are going to go looking for a manager. I don't think they'll be a team that'll be kind of looking for applications per se. I think they'll have a target in mind and somebody they want to bring in first, and that'll be how they'll approach it, I would assume.
The way they've done it, Ben, over the last few years, you kind of sometimes suspect that they've already kind of think they've probably looked at the results and say, okay, we need someone else in here. I mean, that's always been they've always had sort of a quick turnaround, but I don't know if it's different this time because Kev, they did really put all their eggs in one basket with Kev, it seemed. So I think that's the difference there. But you know what? Come to think about it, Blair Munn at Darvel as well. I mean, how many coaches did Darvel need? I mean, he's not ever been I don't think he's ever been a top manager in terms of managing a club himself, but he's certainly one to look out for in the future as well. Not actually sure where Blair's based. I think he's more east than west, to be fair. So he could be another interesting one to keep an eye out for. So Darvel have far too many coaches. What's going on there, eh? Come on, guys. You don't need, you know, manager class coaches on what every level of the game, I guess.
So they've definitely got a squad of people, that's for sure. within the, and that's obviously what money brings you. That you can bring in people like that on probably decent enough money and have a good backroom staff, and it's what a lot of teams want, really, I guess. But yeah, we'll watch this space on East Kilbride, certainly over the next couple of weeks. I assume that Martin Fellows will take the team probably to the end of the season, you'd assume at this point, unless they do have somebody lined up for the job. But I say we'll keep an eye out what's going on there, and we'll keep you posted. And we'll obviously we'll have plenty to talk about, I'm sure, over the next couple of weeks as things kind of materialise in that position. That was all the games and major talking points from the weekend in the Lowland League. However, I've got one more to talk about in the Lowland League, and that is the, what we call it, the separation of Open Goal and Broomhill. It's been indicated that the partnership between Open Goal and Broomhill will cease from the end of the season. Si Ferry, Derek Lyle and Paul Slane will depart at the end of the season. Firstly, Chris, just on that news, what's your views straight off the bat?
It was a surprise, I would say. I was surprised, but we did hear, certainly I've heard, I don't know if it was public knowledge, but it was on a yearly basis, so they did have the chance to renew if need be. I guess the thing that, when I heard that Si was obviously moving to Darvel as a coach or whatever, and he was turning up to training, I thought that was a wee bit disrespectful. I mean, why, I know you've got the management role at Broomhill till the end of the season, I'm guessing. Why are you turning up to another team's training? Yeah, that rubbed me up the wrong way. And I don't care if he's, you know, what the reasons are, this is my new team, blah, blah, blah. You wait until, 1st of June to do that. I didn't like that at all, albeit it is reported. So I know Si's getting a lot of stick and Open Goal are getting a lot of stick, but I think the main issue with, from what I've seen, if I've taken into account the whole season, the main issue I've had with Broomhill is the fact that a lot of people that made that club great left. Michael Park, to begin with, then obviously Moza, I know he's our mate, but you do wonder, can you not, I know Open Goal has their own thing and they want to do their own thing these ways and, you know, their own team or whatever and podcasts and documentaries, but why not utilise people that love the club? It doesn't make any sense to me to push these people aside that, you know, these guys are actually fans of Broomhill, they've been there for years, we incorporate them into your stuff or whatever, eh? But it didn't seem to happen, and that kind of, I didn't like that, because you lose your, we talked about East Kilbride losing their kind of heart and soul with moving on guys that love the club. I think that was, it can be similar to guys off the field as well. It doesn't have to be players or management. I guess, I know that you've got more points, Ben, but I guess the other thing that I noticed was the fact that they didn't really seem to respect the level in a sense, because every time they got beat, it was always like, oh, they're, you know, these teams are wanting to beat us because we're Broomhill. It's like, well, no, some teams beat you because they're probably just equally as good, you know? I don't know if they thought coming into this league it would be easy and, you know, all that, we'll squash every team and we'll go up. It'll be easy to get to League Two and it'll be a success story. Never works like that. And I think that's been a downfall with them. They've probably been a wee bit ill-prepared in terms of the teams. They've probably not known the level. I think I've talked about it all fucking season, to be honest with you, Ben. And if you don't know the level, you're not going to be successful. I'm sorry. You have to learn quickly or you're, you know, it's like me talking about the South of Scotland. I know some things, but I don't go into great detail like I do with the Lone League or you with the West, because at the end of the day, our knowledge is not as good there. I can probably tell you some things about the East or whatever, but I only try and talk about things that I either know about or I've got some incline about. I'm not going to certainly be going full on the South of Scotland if I don't. And then I think that's been the issue. Si's been talking about things like, I'll go back to the Stirling Uni 442. I think that says it all, Ben. But I'll let you speak as well, because I know you have some thoughts and opinions, I guess.
I think it was a shock. We obviously spoke last week in the podcast about Open Goal and not sure where they go and where they turn to. I think we didn't see this coming. Could we see some changes, absolutely. I think we expected maybe the squad to change and players to change, but I didn't foresee them after one season pulling out of the partnership as it was, which I think is disappointing, because I think we can, firstly, let's touch on the positives about Open Goal Broomhill. I think for me, it's been something completely different, and I like the idea of them trying something new. That I could get behind, the content, the media. I think that the one shining light for me has been the documentary that has been available. We both obviously enjoy watching that and been into that quite a bit, and that's a good insight into the team, and have they shown a bit more light onto the Lowland League itself? Absolutely, that's been a positive sign for me. But I think going to the negatives, the point you made about kind of essentially ripping up a club to start again from scratch for their own little vanity project seems like it's quite disappointing for me. That was talked about at the start. We obviously knew the Open Goal Broomhill were going to become a thing, and the Lowland League were bringing the B team. So there was a lot of kind of negativity around both of those things last at the beginning of the season and kind of in the close season. You can see how they got rid of the likes of David Gormley, who was in charge at Broomhill. It seemed like he knew he was getting moved out of there months in advance of the season ending. You've seen from the documentary, they were there watching games and kind of having a bit of criticism for the squad and the players there that were already at Broomhill. They've absolutely cast aside people like Mozza, like Michael, and probably to an extent George Fraser, John Dodds, guys that are at the heart of Broomhill as they were. Albeit George and John have been still involved to a point and certainly kind of ticking over, but it seems like the Open Goal had their own agenda quite a lot of time and didn't really take into account those people, which for me is disappointing. But to duck out after 12 months is a shame. I don't see the harm in sticking around for another year. You mentioned there it's a kind of year-on-year thing, and yeah, that's fine. I mean, from a legal, commercial standpoint, then maybe, yeah, that's fine. But you've got to have a bit more heart for me if that's what you're going to do. What is it? I mean, is it down to viewer numbers, money making, things like that? Probably. I think you can see from the documentary, for example, that the numbers and the viewing were probably quite high to begin with, and they've declined. And the same for the Open Goal Broomhill podcast, which is kind of, I think, became less and less over the course, whether that's because of numbers or, I guess, application from the likes of Slaney, etc., who are involved in that side of things rather than Si. You think you see what they do with Open Goal, the podcast. I mean, they could do some good stuff. I'm not a massive fan nowadays of the talking kind of podcast that they do on YouTube. I do like the kind of the interview type style stuff they do. I do enjoy watching them meeting managers and meeting players and things like that and having kind of more interviews. But it's just a shame it's ended this way. That's the thing for me.
The problem with that, nothing to do with Broomhill. I always find if you're doing, what, 3-4 podcasts a week, naturally people are not going to, your viewer numbers are going to go down because you're overexposing yourself. You know, if you keep it once a week or whatever, your numbers are relatively the same, or potentially higher if you get new subs or whatever, or new people. But when you're a podcast every couple of days, people tend to just drop off unless it's part of the routine. We've seen it ourselves. So I mean, that's just the natural bit of YouTube. I mean, a lot of people, unless it's part of the routine, won't listen to a podcast, won't listen to, for example, I listen to an audiobook when I'm going to work, and that's the only time I'll listen to it. So it takes me a few weeks to finish, you know, a 12-hour audiobook because, you know, it's the only time I listen to it is during work. And it's similar with podcasts as well. Not that I listen to loads apart from ours when I have to obviously edit it, but you obviously spoke about positives there as well, Ben. I think the positive was mainly for Open Goal. it showed them that they could, you know, Broomhill are not going to be in a great place after this. So was it worth it? Probably not. Open goal. The impressive thing were the attendances. They showed that Friday night football was definitely a thing to back. The documentary, as you mentioned, was great. I must admit, I liked the documentary. But when do you really blame Si for wanting to move on? No, I don't think so. If he's got an opportunity elsewhere, don't blame him for that. I mean, everyone has opportunities in life. It's like if someone, for example, if it wasn't Darvo and it was Peterhead, people would totally understand. So why is it different because it's Darvo? Because they're lower? There's no reason, really. It's just he's taken an opportunity. What I don't like is how it's done.
So just for context, for anyone who's wondering what Chris is talking about, the suggestion is here that Si Ferry is leaving Broomhill at the end of the season and will become Mick Kennedy's assistant manager at Darvo. So there's been rumours, there's been suggestions, and from what we've heard, that I think Chris alluded to it earlier on as well, that Si Ferry was at the Darvo training midweek, for example. We mentioned Craig McEwen, currently assistant manager. He's probably going to be moved aside or moved down the peg if Si is coming in. We don't have that for sure right now. That must be something we categorically can say. We don't know for sure. We have some sources that suggest the things we've said is true and that is happening. We know that Si and Mick are obviously good mates. Mick's been on the podcast before, chatted about the Darvo games and stuff like that. So it wouldn't shock me if that is something that comes through. Si has been linked with the Peterhead job, but obviously David Irons has left Peterhead through the week as well. So it's possible that he may be going to Peterhead, but has he done anything good enough to warrant that? I mean, he's obviously got a connection there to Peterhead, but I wouldn't say he's done anything any great shakes with Broomhill this season. That there's no doubt about that. They've had some good spells, but largely they finished what, at least 11th in the table, potentially lower depending on what sort of run they go on in the last few weeks. So, yeah, do you think Si to Darvo is a goer, Chris?
Yeah, more so than Peterhead. Just because I know Si has a relationship with Peterhead, just, you know, as a player, as a coach or whatever. But, I don't think it's... I think it's less likely because of what you just said. He's not really proven himself as a manager this season with Broomhill. And for Peterhead to take a chance on, especially going down a league, what it looks like as well, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. Whereas... I do believe the Darvo rumours, I guess. I don't know. Maybe he does. I mean, he does obviously have a lot of heart for Peterhead. And would it be a popular choice with the fans? I'm not actually sure. I'm guessing maybe because Si's a popular guy. But yeah. I don't know if you would take the chance. Because
there will be that feeling, I guess, so for the Peterhead fans, is that maybe that circus mentality and the baggage that comes with Si and being attached to the Open Goal. And that's obviously going to follow Si around wherever he goes. Doesn't matter, unless he breaks away from Open Goal, which personally I don't think he does, because they're probably in a fortunate position right now where they're making good money and Open Goal is probably going to supplement it. That's probably his job effectively, isn't it? Let's be honest. We'd all love to be in that position. I'll be frank about that. I'd love nothing better than my day job to be a podcast, to be doing podcasts. That's something that I would love to do. I think you'd be the same, Chris. But certainly,
I do too much editing. I don't. Well, I actually enjoy the editing, but yeah, it takes hours and hours. So,
but I mean, if you got to that point where you are Open Goal, you'd be paying some other guy to the editing, and you'd just be the.
It would be all right.
Yeah, we'd be cushy, and maybe that's something. I mean, we I've said this before. We're probably going to get a little bit sidetracked here. We don't do this podcast for money. We do it because we like talking about football and this level and passionate about the game. And we find that there's probably not a lot of voices for non-league football within this level, and we feel we do that. So, Open Goal's objectives are clearly slightly different to ours in terms of they're looking to make money, grow their brand, and make themselves. And that's probably what they try to do with the partnership with Broomhill. So you're always going to find that Si's going to be attached to that. I don't see a sort of natural situation where Si breaks off to focus on a full-time job, unless he gets offered something big within maybe League One, League Championship, which right now I don't think he's in a position to get. He's probably dreaming of getting the Celtic job at some point. That's probably in his dreams and try to make the steps to get there. But he needs to go and reset. And I think we touched on it last week about Si as a coach. We know he's a good coach. I think we can tell he's got that in him as a coach. Has he got it as a manager? They're totally different jobs as far as I'm concerned. And I think maybe he's maybe found out in the last year or so that the management side of it is the tougher side of it, and maybe it's not for him and the coaching side. So maybe Darvel is a move for him, certainly in the short term. It wouldn't shock me if he went in there to support Mick and be a part of that. Again, we talked about the East Kilbride situation. If Mick and Si or Si in his own potential could go to East Kilbride, if that's the kind of route they want to go down, who knows, that's a possibility. But we'll definitely see what happens. The next bit I want to bring up about the Broomhill is specifically around the statement that was announced on Thursday, Chris. I think for me, the statement that came out was something that was very odd. I think it was a bit of word salad, if you ask me. There was a lot of in there about positives and things that were great, about growing Twitter followings and how many impressions they had and how many Instagram followers they had, how many viewers they had on the YouTube channel and all of this.
All about engagement.
Yeah, it was all about the numbers and things like that. So that to me was very telling. You've got comments from the likes of George Fraser about how great they were in terms of the cup run and things like that. But for me, it wasn't even the best cup run that Broomhill have had. I mean, they were, as BSC played Glasgow, Hibs. They played Hibs, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So there wasn't anything amazing about the cup run as far as I'm concerned. And Si's made some comments about how good an experience it was for him and things like that. And yeah, that's absolutely true. But there's a lot of positives coming out of the statement, but nothing at all really saying the reasons why this is not happening, why this is split up and why there's been a split. So yeah, a very odd comment. People will be pleased, I think. I think there's a natural situation there where Open Goal come in for a lot of hate and criticism, and people will be glad that Open Goal have gone from this level of football. That'll definitely be a thing, and they'll be levelled. And I think, to be quite honest, I've seen a few comments that is probably quite justified as far as I'm concerned. That those comments are allowed to be made by fans. He's entitled to their opinion, and that's just how they viewed Open Goal when they first came into Broomhill, and that's not going to change. There's obviously a bit of a negativity around Broomhill to start with because of the kind of the name change from BSC to Glasgow, the kind of new club aspect of them. But the final question then before we move on, Chris, where did Broomhill go as a club from here?
I put out a theory, and it's 100% Ming before anyone tries to claim it, but I think they'll merge with Rossville at some point and they become one club. I don't know when, but certainly if people that don't know Rossville are kind of a feeder club at the moment to Broomhill, or certainly War at the time, I don't think you need two clubs now because obviously the Open Goal project isn't continuing. So, and that's why you essentially have Rossville and the Rossville Academy. I think one of them's changing their names at some point. So, but yeah, I think they will merge at some point because it seems like George, not that I've spoken to him recently, but certainly he seems really invested in Rossville as much as Broomhill. So I think how long does that last? Because you can't really be running two clubs or being involved with two clubs. It's very difficult to do that. So now that it's over, will it be a case of they merge into one club in the Lone League? Will they go west? I'm not 100% sure. But that's my little theory on it. I don't know. I mean, a lot of what was built up there, I'm assuming they won't have the money to pay Kirk Broadfoot or all these guys. So Broomhill, for me, are going to be on a mad decline unless Stephen Swift comes back or something like that. Unless they get a decent manager with links and whatever else. you can't replace the people that were there, though. You can't replace the Michael Parks, the, you know, Mozzas, Martin Flemings. You can't replace these guys that had this the heart and soul that actually supported the club, really. Because, you know, Broomhill don't have a lot of supporters. And I know Rossville keep going on about that type of thing as well. So, yeah, for the club, I think it's been a massive failure. I've mentioned it before. And for Open Goal, they can just go out. Yeah, it's fine. We'll move on. We'll do, you know, shows, whatever it would be. Either, you know, the, what is that called? The SECC or whatever. So, yeah, it's a shame. One thing I will pick up on, though, because you mentioned about people are criticising Broomhill. I did see this bit of weirdness that people that used to criticise the old BSE Glasgow, Broomhill, etc., before even Open Goal were involved, they've kind of changed their tune now. Like, all oh, these poor people, poor George Fraser, well, not so much George Fraser, but poor Mozza, poor this. And I'm like, these guys used to hate Broomhill, so why are you changing your tune now? Is it because are Open Goal more of the dark side than Open Goal, than Broomhill? I don't know, but it's very strange to me that they're suddenly poor, these poor guys, rather than we've always hated Broomhill. I don't understand it, to be honest. People are strange to me.
Yeah, personally, I feel it's a complete shame in the first instance for Broomhill and the people. We've also alluded to that already on earlier on, but I think Broomhill become, unfortunately, a bit of a laughing stock at this point in time. And I think personally, it probably fizzles out because I don't think they can sustain a lot of the things that they'll need to do is to stay in the league, because as a club before Open Goal came in, they weren't a team that were by any means up right up there. They had one good season under Stephen Swift, where it was the COVID season and they brought in the likes of Daz Christie, Jamie Glasgow, Andy Leishman, Craig McCracken into the side, and that beefed them as a squad, and it probably gave them a bit of a false position in the division, because they had those really good players within that league, and obviously it was COVID and stuff, and it was a bit different. They don't have a lot of fans. You mentioned that there. The Rossville thing would probably make sense and go away and merge those two and rebrand together and become a force, or try and become a force as one. Well, not that's in the Lowland League or in the first division of the West of Scotland. I'm not too sure. I mean, you probably, there could be an argument there to go down to the first division of the West and try and reset and build a team and build a following and get the kind of community aspect into it. The one that stands out for me is that name, the Broomhill name. As it stands, they're playing in Cumbernauld, they've played at Alloa in the past. They're not playing in Glasgow, they're not playing in Broomhill, really. They're playing out there, and maybe it needs that kind of that attachment. Rossville, obviously, would make sense to me. I don't think Rossville are going to get the location that they want in terms of where they're ground. I think they've got a lot of work still to do to get Hunters Hill up to to where they want to be and as a club, and that's something that they're obviously working on, and Broomhill are going to be doing probably the similar kind of thing. So it would absolutely make sense. George has got a foot in the camp already with Rossville, and he's been supporting them and helping them to try and grow and establish, because they've had that difficult period of time where they have to change names and stuff like that, because they've got the Rossville Academy and all that kind of stuff. They're playing in Division 4 at the West of Scotland. I mean, I'll be honest, I'll be frank about Rossville right now. I don't dislike everything about them. I'm absolutely happy to die on that hill if I have to. Their attitude on social media about having no fans is horrible and disrespectful to anyone who goes to those games in the first place, whether that's a parent of a player or they still have fans, and this crying about having no fans. And I'll be honest, I've had beef with Rossville on Twitter before. They blocked me and things like that, so I'm not really fussed about. I'm not going to lose any sleep over what I say about Rossville, but that may be a good thing for Rossville and for Broomhill to merge. That could be a thing in the past. And like I said before, we'll watch this space and we'll make sure to keep everyone up to date with what's going on there. There'll be plenty more to come out in this. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
One point I will say, though, is I think the only thing I'd really disagree with what you said there is Broomhill were a success, really. Up until last season, they were well, they were 15th last season under David Gormley.
Is that a success?
Well, no, but before that, it was from 2017-18 season, they were third. Then they were second in the 2018-19 season, and then they were third, and then fourth. So they've always been a top-half team from when I've covered the league.
Fair enough, fair enough.
But anyway, we've covered Broomhill so much.
Right, that's us then for the whole of the lower league. The, as I said at the beginning, the circus is leaving the town, so we don't have to worry anymore about open goal and the Broomhill scenario. We'll park that for now, and we'll come back, I'm sure, when we've got a new manager or kind of a pathway ahead for Broomhill. But let's move on to the rest of the games across some of the leagues within the non-league football in Scotland. We'll go straight to the East of Scotland, where there was four games in total in the East Scotland Premier Division. And it was on Friday night, we had Musselburgh Athletic 1, Haddington 1, Inverkeith and Hillfield Swifts 2, Broxbourne Athletic 1, Fairleigh 0, Dundonald Bluebells 7, and Sauchie Juniors 2, Genefield Swifts 0. There was three games postponed, either because of cups or weather, I'm not exactly sure. But, I mean, I guess just to quickly round it up, a decent result from Sauchie beating Genefield, another win, keeps them kind of closer to Linlithgow Rose, I guess, from that perspective. The other one that probably stands out, Chris, Broxbourne getting beat by Inverkeith and Hillfield Swifts.
Yeah, we praised Broxbourne a wee bit last week because they eventually won a game, but the Swifts beating them, just inconsistency, and I think it's the same applies to Musselburgh getting the derby against Haddington Athletic, you know, 1-1. Musselburgh, I've mentioned them last week and before, obviously, they look like they're building a really decent team there, but the results have just not shown that. I would expect Musselburgh to be flying, and they're not. And to me, that's a wee bit worrying. Because if they're going to be, well, I guess, the Linlithgow of next season, if Linlithgow are promoted to the Lone League, I don't see it so far. And it's disappointing. I mean, you're looking at Sauchie, and they're doing really well. Maybe they'll be the team to step up, or Pennycook, obviously, with Callum Elliott's coming in. So interesting. I think East of Scotland will be an interesting one to look out for next season. I think it'll be highly competitive if Linlithgow Rose get promoted. If Linlithgow Rose don't get promoted to the Lone League, I think they're still the top team there for me. But yeah, not much to talk about in terms of all the results, because obviously there was a few postponements given weather and whatnot. But one thing I will do is give a wee shout out to two teams in the First Division. Obviously, Rosyth beating Camelin Juniors, Fife team. Obviously, I'm going to give them a wee bit of credit. And Kirkcaldy and Dysart, another Fife team, beating Dunbar United 2-1 away from home also. So they were surprising results for me, but won the Fife teams. Good results there for I guess, Rosyth, looking at that, 4-2 against the old Syngenta, I guess. Is that what we're calling them?
The old Syngenta. Right, moving on then to the South of Scotland League, and there was a full card of fixtures in the South of Scotland League, and started off Friday night. Newton Stewart 1, Abbey Vale 5, Widton Bladnock 1, Lochmaben 2, Upper Arndale 0, Cree Town 5, St Cuthbert's Wanderers 5, Nithsdale Wanderers 0, Mid Arndale 1, Stranraer 5, and Lochar Thistle 7, Cali Braves Reserves 2. I mean, I think I've said it before. One thing you can talk about in the South of Scotland League, Chris, is goals. There's plenty of goals to be had. Defending is not an option in these leagues.
No, I mean, it's a strange one, because we do have very strong South of Scotland teams, and then there's, I guess it's what I kind of said, there's no middle ground, but like East Kilbride in terms of wages, I guess. So yeah, there's no middle ground. You either get like really solid outfits, obviously Abbey Vale, Cree Town, Lochar Thistle, and then you've probably got sort of the weaker end, obviously, Wigtown and Bladnock. Sorry to pick on them, but it's a strange league, obviously a smaller league as well. So I guess one thing we can mention, obviously, we kind of missed it last week because I had to edit a few bits out on their South of Scotland coverage. But yeah, just to make it clear that none of the three top teams at the moment are licensed. So I guess Linlithgow Rose, if Beeve and you know, the South team, I guess, either Abbey Vale, Cree Town, or Lochar Thistle. None of them are licensed. The only licensed team and teams in the South of Scotland are Newton Stewart, St Cuthbert's, obviously, that we know about, and Wigtown and Bladnock. So, yeah, it looks like it might be a straight promotion for Linlithgow Rose if Beeve or the South of Scotland team, either Cree Town or Abbey Vale or Lochar Thistle, get, you know, win the league, then it's Linlithgow Rose on easy street for them. Eh?
I'm going to... We don't do an awful lot talking about South Scotland football, but I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball out there, Chris, just to get your opinion on this. Do you think it would be a wise move for the South of Scotland League to merge with the West of Scotland League?
It's been talked about before. Certainly, I think the quality of the South of Scotland is not the same, with all due respect to that league. But if you look at the top end, I'm talking about the very top end of, you know, the West of Scotland, East of Scotland. To me, it's not the same in terms of quality. We had a really good St Cuthbert side last year under Jordan, and they struggled against, obviously, Tranent and Darvel. A lot of the Scottish Cup games are very heavy defeats, and you're talking maybe even middle of the run East of Scotland, West of Scotland teams. Not even the very top teams can put a lot past these South of Scotland teams. So it's just not the same quality. Do I think they'll merge? I think they, in an ideal world, yes, but I don't think they will, because I think they like their own identity. Like, I think cost might be an issue in terms of, you know, they're all playing in Dumfries and Galloway. If they kind of merge into the West of Scotland, they've got, or look at Free Rovers as well, for example, they've got so much travelling to do now compared to when they were in the South. Will it improve the actual quality of the clubs? Possibly, if they move to the West. But I mean, look at Glasgow Wellington that are moving to the South. They're doing that for, I'm sorry, but one obvious reason, to skip the queue, essentially. I've not heard another reason for it. They said that there was other reasons for it, but I've not actually heard any other valid thing.
Any reason that Glasgow Wellington have to join that league other than for the purposes of getting to the top, being in a tier six division in order to get into that playoff discussion is the only reason that I can see for Glasgow Wellington. They want to be a big fish in a small pond. That's exactly what it is. I think if they were to go into the West of Scotland, they've got to start at tier 10 as it stands.
Maybe tier 9. It depends. I don't know if they're the division.
Well, it depends if your ground. Yeah. It's always to be a ground been up to standard, isn't it, I think. But I don't even know if that's the case. I think you maybe have to start at tier 10 and move up. However, you look at Threave, you mentioned them there, and Threave certainly moved across for the benefits. They did a bit. We're not a big fan of A View from the Terrace, but certainly they did a bit on there before and talked about it, and they've seen the benefits of moving across, and they could find a level within the pyramid much more naturally, and they can maybe build a team to rise up and get back to where they want to be, because Threave are obviously a bigger side and been in the cups and stuff like that in the past. But I think, as I understand it, and I could be completely wrong on this, but Nithsdale Wanderers looking to move across to the West of Scotland as well at this point, over the next couple of months with the new potential new team. So there may be teams that are in that kind of west half of the league. You've obviously got teams like Kello, Lugar, etc., that are kind of further south of Ayrshire, that kind of are closer to these teams. Do we know what Dalbeattie will do if they get relegated?
They'll definitely be south, I would imagine.
Going south, right?
Yeah, they're members of the south, unless they apply to East of Scotland, which I don't think
they
would.
West of Scotland, though?
Well, even Gretna said that they would go south rather than,
right,
than
okay.
East. They were East of Scotland previously. So I guess it would be up to the club, but I have no doubts that the Dalbeattie would probably be south of Scotland.
Yeah, I think clubs need to define their location and stick to it, and that would be that make the most sense for me. And the Glasgow, back to Glasgow Wellington, just quickly, absolute farce for situation.
There's probably a money factor as well, Ben. Like, if Dalby will probably earn more money playing in the West of Scotland Premier than they would the South of Scotland, without any question.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Without the crowds of, you know, Auchinleck and Pollock and all these sort of teams. So, I don't know, maybe it is a financial decision to go to the West for some of these clubs.
I think so, and I think the competitions, the cup competitions, are probably stronger as well for a lot of these teams. So you maybe do get the draws and things like that, and the cups that maybe get you half gates and stuff like that, that absolutely make it more sense. So, yeah, again, we'll keep an eye on what happens there. We are 1 hour into this podcast probably at this point in time, but we still have the West of Scotland to cover off, as we always do, and not loads to talk about, I guess, in the West of Scotland for a change. Right, moving on then to the West of Scotland League, and we'll start off with the games in the Premier League. Starting off on Friday night, it was Kilwinning Rangers 1, Cumnock 1. Absolute heartbreaker for Buffs to draw that game. We were dominant, we were excellent, I'm not going to lie. We played probably some of the best football we've played all season, and looked solid at the back, made a few changes. The start from the defeat on Tuesday night to Glenafton, to lose a penalty in the last minute, it's just so hard to take. I think it's a club who are kind of fighting for our lives right now and down the bottom. Big Jack McCallum, he's made a lapse in concentration, made a mistake. All he needs to do is hook the ball clear, and there's not even a concern. He puts out for a corner, puts out for a throw-in, whatever it needs to be, and we're 1-0, game's a bogey. But I was... This is the kind of first time I've seen Cumnock this season, given the first game that we had against Cumnock. I seen 20 minutes and then had to take Regan O'Sullivan to hospital, so I didn't see an awful lot of the game where we lost 5-2 earlier in the season down at Townhead. And I thought Cumnock were very poor, to be quite honest. I'll be honest there. I thought they weren't the team that we were talking about at the start of the season, that's for sure. I don't know if teams have found them out, and they seem to just be struggling to get it right. They seem to make mistakes that welcome on pressure a lot of time, and giving the ball up from the back. I don't know if they're trying to play out from the back a bit and putting themselves under pressure, and it just seems like it's all going wrong for Cumnock. And I mean, they've got a point there on Friday night, but if they lost that, they'd have been probably getting a bit closer to that relegation door. I think they'll be safe in the grand scheme, but yeah, massively disappointing for us to draw. Other results then on the Saturday was Athlone 2, Evermead 0, Cambuslang Rangers 2, Hereford United 1, Clydebank 0, Beath 1, Pollock 2, Darvel 3, and Troon 1, Largs Thistle 2, and the game between Auchinleck and Glenafton was abandoned inside 10 minutes. Firstly, on that one, I was shocked that game started, to be quite honest. We played there on Tuesday night under heavy, heavy rain, and that pitch by the end of it did not look playable the next day. The weather hasn't been brilliant down here, and there was a big lash and a rain came down about 1 o'clock, I think, from as I understand it. I'm very surprised that the match went ahead, but it did end up in an abandoned match, and just adds to the fixture headache that will be in the West of Scotland League going forward.
Particularly for Auchinleck Talbot, who, you know, I think I said it last week and we've said it previously, would you rather have the points or would rather have the games? I think at the moment, certainly, well, we're coming into April almost, and I think you'd rather have the points on the board. I think it's going to be a tough ask. They're going to basically have to do a Darvel last season to try and win the league. Still in it, but I think it's very tough on Auchinleck to come back and try and win this league just based on the amount of games that they're going to have to play. But yeah, the weather's not been great through here either. It's not probably been as bad, but there was a few postponements obviously in East of Scotland as well.
Yeah, on the fixtures, it's getting a bit of a joke now. I'm not going to lie, I can be quite honest about this and say that it's unfair on the teams that are playing towards the end. Why are we in a situation now where we're having to schedule games Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, for example, like we're doing? We're going to Auchinleck on a Monday night, which firstly, for us, it's like a 45-minute, an hour drive down there. It's not great for the fans. It's a big, I mean, Auchinleck Colwyn Rangers are a big game in the West Scotland League, and it's on a Monday night. That's just, for me, pretty poor. We could have been playing midweek games back in September, October, August, whatever it be. And now what's happened is the teams have got floodlights have been kind of penalised because they've got floodlights. That's how I feel about it. And something needs to change because we get in this situation year on year on year with the fixtures. It's just absolutely diabolical that we're here. Darvel had it last year, like you mentioned. Auchinleck are going to be in the same boat. They're probably in the driving seat, unfortunately, at this point in time because they've played more games and they've got the points on the board. They've got less games to play. They don't have floodlights, so they won't be playing as many games midweek at home, for example. So it will be difficult, certainly, for Auchinleck. I hope Auchinleck win it because I want to see our team go into that playoff and play on Lithgow Rose in the playoff. But because I think the thing that stands out for me here is if we can't get a licensed club into the playoff, then our argument for increased promotion and all that becomes less a lot of time. Because if you're not good enough to be in that Lowland League because you can't get teams into the promotion, then we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot a wee bit down the west if we can't get a team. Auchinleck, absolutely by no means out of it. Absolutely capable. And yes, our Auchinleck fans who listen to this podcast will be saying, ah, but you said we were out of it in October. We were, because we didn't foresee Darvel absolutely fucking up, is what I've done here.
That was more of a Glasgow accent you put on there, by the way.
Yeah, I could have done that.
It was a bit nasally.
the deepest, darkest South Ayrshire accent, but I didn't want to offend anyone, so I just went for a generic accent there. But yeah, it's a difficult one. I hope Auchinleck can do it personally, but I mean, not at the expense of not winning against Colwyn Rangers because we need the points on the board. So hopefully we'll play them. We've got them in the cup. I mean, I think the way it's looking like we're just now, we're playing Auchinleck on the Monday, playing someone else on the Wednesday, and then Auchinleck again on the Saturday, both down at Auchinleck. So it's certainly going to be an interesting one for us, but yeah, we'll see what happens, and hopefully the fixtures get sorted out for next season and we get to a point, because I mean, we're in scenarios where junior cup matches are taking over from West Scotland League games and things like that. That if you're playing the juniors cup, for example, and you want to play the junior cup, you should be made to be playing midweek when that, like, for example, if the junior cup first round's on in 5th of September, then you should be playing midweek on the week before or the week after, or something like that.
No.
There shouldn't be any of this crap where a game that was, I mean, I think we've got a game from against Peters Hill that was meant to be in September is now getting played in April. It's like, that game should have been long done and played in a way out the fixture list. It's all great having a full year fixture list, but if it just jumps about and moves around, then it's a bit garbage, if you ask me.
I mean, I've been critical in the past of the Lone League and the East of Scotland fixture secretary because of, obviously, I think Ken Beef, there was an example where they almost didn't play for a month. But in fairness, it's all right. Look, it's looking fairly decent for most teams in the Lone League in terms of their fixtures they've got left. So they still get them done without any too much hassle, I would say. And I think it's similar with East of Scotland. I've not done full checks there, so I might be wrong, but... Yeah, too many cups, I would say. There's a lot of trophies to play for, and I think that affects it this late on if you're still in a competition. So,
I think for me, the biggest problem will be that Junior Cup, because it's an external competition. It gets brought in. Games get favoured over Junior Cup games, get favoured over West Scotland League games at times to allow that to happen. For what reason, I don't understand, because I'm sure there's somewhere in the rules they're talking about external competitions and things like that, but something has to change in the West of Scotland. Absolutely, for me, got to change at some point, and hopefully that does happen, but we'll see what else happens. Moving on then to some of the other games that took place. It was a couple of games on Friday night. Pollock 2, Darvel 3, Pollock 2-0 up, and Darvel pulling it back to stay in the hunt, I guess. Still a big ask for Darvel, I get, to win that league, but They had to get a result, or for me, they were over.
Yeah, it looked like curtains, didn't it, when Pollock were 2-0 up. It really looked bad for Darvel. I just don't think you can ever count them out until it's mathematically impossible. But yeah, I mean, we mentioned it last week. Obviously, if we're not winning games and they're still hunting for regain the West of Scotland Premier title, I mean, it's difficult. I don't know what's going on with Darvo. I really don't. I think we talked about it in depth last episode, but now it's even more distracting, obviously, with everything that's probably going on with Cy Ferry coming in and all this sort of stuff. So there always seems to be distractions at Darvo, and I don't know what it is, but it's not always necessarily great for the players of the club when they've got really tough matches coming up and games that, as you say, Ben, they have to win. Let's not get distracted. Let's focus on the football, get the job done, and then you've got the whole summer to say your piece on whatever else.
I don't know what's going on at Darvo. Getting the results obviously really important. You can see, I think, I guess from the squad perspective, they're maybe struggling. You've seen Daryl Meggett, he's been out of the team the last few months. I think he's carrying it seems like a bit of an injury. He's probably struggling to get many game times. I think they lost Willie Robertson, who just came back in at the side. Craig Truesdale's been out, and just kind of maybe Chalkman changed the defence a wee bit. David Sims came back in from Trun and back in the side and a very capable centre half, so maybe helping to kind of stem the tide a wee bit. They've got the depth. That's what we've always said about Darvel. And if Darvel do win it, then it's because of that depth. So yep. I think they've got an absolute standard player. They've got guys like McShane and Meakin, etc., who very capable. Jordan Allen, Jordan Kirkpatrick, that we know are good players. Andy McDonald's come in recently, knows his stuff. And that squad they've got on the bench, Thomas Riley, Meggett, absolute guys there. I mean, I still find it fascinating that Thomas Riley sits on the bench for Darvo week in, week out. I don't know what's going on there. He's wasting himself at Darvo, and if he's not under contract in the summer,
then get him to Kilwinning.
He's got to be looking for a move. I mean, I'd love him at Kilwinning. I mean, that'd be
a dream move.
A player, he's local. He would fit in, you know, at Buffs Park. I have no doubt about it. But maybe we can't afford him. I don't know what his situation is in terms of wages and things like that. So I don't know if he'll be in a position to actually be able to do that. But yeah, interesting one to say the least on Darvo. Elsewhere, then in the West of Scotland, it was Clyde nil, Beath won. Another win on the board for Beath keeps him well in touch and very capable about winning. It seems like it was a close game from what I've seen and what I've heard from Clyde Bank. Clyde Bank a wee bit disappointed not to get a result. Clyde Bank have done great things this season, and they'll be, I think, they're quite happy with their performance in the league, and they can absolutely build on that for next season.
Outdone by a Josh Fowler goal, I heard. So
every other weekend it seems to be.
He's on fire, eh?
Actually, one of those ones, if you can't stop him, then he's going to give him a chance. He's going to get it. I mean, I've seen the goal. It was quite scrappy. It was quite... But that's what you want from your striker, 100%. Get the ball in the net. Who cares how else he performs and what else he does in the game. But if he wins you the match, then fair play.
No complaints, yeah.
There are two games then. Canberra Slang Rangers 2, Hurlingford United 1, and Athlone 2, Arvin Meadow 1. Not good results for Kilwinning Rangers. I'm going to say both those teams down the bottom picking up wins, which... not ideal. We do have the games in hand, but we need to be winning the games that we're playing. We had Glenafton the other night. Should be winning those. We've got Rob Roy on Wednesday. Got to be winning that for us. And we'd rather not that if Athlone and Cambuslang didn't pick up any more points. But when they are, we're going to have to keep in touch with them. And that's something we're going to be doing. But fair play to both teams getting results, because it kind of looked like they were a bit struck, certainly Cambuslang more than others, because Hurlingford are a good side. But yeah. It's going to be an interesting run into the bottom of the West, just as well as the top. We missed a game from Friday night, and that was Trun 1, Largs 2. The battle of the informed teams, Crisp, your beloved Largs doing the job over Jimmy Cutwood and Dean Keenan's Trun side.
Yeah, in fairness, I think Trun were down to 10 men for a large period of that game, but yeah, we're looking at logs now and thinking they're on an amazing run. Crazy. Stuart Davidson, I think, recently signed till up until 2025. There was a lot of speculation of, you know, a wee bit of whether he could maybe step up to another team, but I mean, he's settled at logs, and it certainly helps when Will Seale's back and they're firing. It's a complete turnaround. You know, I'd hesitate to say it's the best turnaround I've ever seen in football, but certainly it's very impressive. Considering even when Will Seale, before he moved to Steny, Largs were still a kind of lower, I would say, in fairness, a lower side, probably, you know, yeah. But now they're right up there. It's almost astonishing. I mean, the only other side that I can think of is probably Lothian Thistle, Hutchie Vale in East of Scotland that have had that sort of transformation this season, where they went from a side you're not really expecting to do anything, and then suddenly they're on a hit a run of form. And I mean, it's as easy as that, but it's not really easy, is it? you need a lot of luck and a lot of talent and a lot of everything else in football, eh? So
no, I think you're right. I think Largs have done amazing, because I think for me, Troon and Largs were going to be right in amongst the relegation fights as far as I was concerned. They've managed to pull themselves out there quite quickly, and fair play to them. Largs, obviously a side that stayed up just and no more last season because of the situation where how many teams get relegated, but yeah. They're very capable. They obviously don't have maybe the investment that they had before. I think they were fortunate to have kind of backers and the guy who was the millionaire from Largs, who won the lottery, whatever it was, put some money in, helped build the kind of infrastructure around the club and things like that, put the pitch in, etc., which is obviously good for them. They don't have the same support. So them as a club are probably trying to reset a wee bit. Getting Arnie signed up for a few years is pretty good. I expect them to go up the way, like you said. I think that was a thing I expected to happen. And kind of had heard rumours, like you said, of clubs that he was kind of looking at and talking to, and didn't materialise. And you're probably looking at the jobs like the Pollock job and Cowan Rangers, etc., that were available. But his heart's obviously in Largs and wants to be at Largs. There's obviously a good community feel there at Largs. You look at Will Sewell going back there and wanting to play there. Will probably could have signed for Darvel as an example and went and got a few hundred quid a week and played for Darvel and helped kind of win them the league. Or he could have went to Apollo, he'd been at Clydebank, Auchinleck. He could have probably picked the team he wanted to go to. I mean, poor Will, and he's probably chosen to go to Largs. So, and he'll bring on all the other players in that team as well. That's the other thing that Will Sewell will do. You look at David Ramsey. David Ramsey was decent enough for the Buffs last season. Went to Irvine Meadow, didn't have a great start to the season. Moved to Largs early on in the year for whatever reason, and has found form and found goals. And that's what Largs needed at the time, as a goal scorer, and they got that from Ramsey. They get guys like Conor McGoldrick at the back, who very capable centre-half, that it seems to be that Arnie can find these guys that are kind of little gems that come in and they end up moving on at some point, shall we say, because they've been in form. Look at Blair McIntyre's a great example of that from us at Buffs. He's probably odds on to be our player of the year at this point in time, and was one of the guys that played at Largs, did quite well, and not a name that we'd have known and really talked about in a great deal, but come into this Buffs side and he's brilliant. I mean, he's probably, as I say, arguably player of the year. If he doesn't get at least player of the year and players player of the year, I'd be surprised, to be quite honest. He goes about his business unreal. And that's what Largs do. They find guys like him and they eventually get their moves. Well, that's maybe the model at Largs doesn't quite work, in the sense that they find these guys and they go out of contract and they move for free in the summers. Maybe they need to try and find a way to sell these guys for profit when they do find them, because I mean that's where we're at now. You're in a situation where teams like Darvel, Cumnock, St Caddocks, Drumchapel are spending 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever it is, grand on players. Then Largs find a gem of a player they can absolutely make probably 4, 5, 6k on a player. That's the market we're in now, unfortunately, in this level of football. I've heard the stories the other week of, I think, Johnston Borough trying to sell one of the centre halves for about $3,500 or something like that. I mean, the first division player going for that kind of money, that's what we're talking about now. And where we're at in the West is the fact that teams do spend money, and that's what we've all got to adapt to. So, no, absolutely fair play to Largs. Got to commend them. We talked about Trun plenty last week in the podcast. They're obviously a team that I've done well and I've improved massively over the course of the weeks. But I still want to play for in the West, eh, Chris?
Yeah. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to keep up, obviously. I mean, the Lowland League's not settled. I think the only settled league is probably the East of Scotland Premier. I've mentioned it many times. Linlithgow, they'll be keeping a close eye, I think, on what happens, particularly the West of Scotland Premier, if Beeve, because I'm pretty sure they'll be shouting and screaming to get promoted automatically, depending on what happens there. We have heard of fast-track applications and whatnot, but that's mainly when there's not been any opposition, if that makes sense. For example, there was no opposition to when Bonnyrigg done it. They were the team that would have been promoted either way. So it's difficult. It really is difficult. But in terms of playing a promotion, will Beeve even be allowed to play in Linlithgow or the South of Scotland team? I'm not 100% sure. But I think it's automatic.
I think it is, yeah. I think it would be. I think you've got to be a licensed club. And I don't know where Beeve are at. I don't know if they have applied for a license. I don't think so, from what I understand, that they'll... Obviously, people think about the license, it's all about the ground and the floodlights and all that kind of caper, but there's a lot of work required off the park in terms of admin and getting policies and procedures in place and individuals in place and all that, and the ground and things like that all come as a part of that. I think from Beeve's perspective, they win the league, they get into the Scottish Cup anyway, so is there a benefit to get into the Lowland League just now? I don't know if there is for Beeve. There's a lot of teams that look at the Lowland League and go, that it's a worse league for us to go into. We understand it's a stepping stone to league football, and unfortunately, it's the nature of the beast where we've got to get our way through there. But from Beeve's perspective, they get in the Scottish Cup regardless of because they win the West of Scotland.
Yeah,
and be no harm in going having another season in the West of Scotland, and as a team that they are, they've kept the nucleus of the squad already signed up for next year, so they've got the capable players. Other teams are absolutely going to strengthen, but it's not the end of the world. I think if Beeve stay in the West of Scotland Premier League for them personally. That's pretty much it from us on the official catch up podcast. Is it Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon now as we record this? There's a couple of games taking place involving some of our Lowland League teams. We have the Spartans versus Gretna this afternoon, and we have the Easter Scotland.
Yeah, Easter Scotland City Cup final. It's the strangest cup competition in world football. It really is, because you only really get a semi-final and a final. And I think, I can't remember how it works. I mean, it's been so long that... that I remember, but it's previously had like Edinburgh City, Kelly Hearts, I think Bonnyrigg were in it this year as well, Berwick Rangers have been in it, so it's, I think it's the Lowland League champions plus one of the East of Scotland Cup winners, and then it's the relegated team into the Lowland League or something like that. It's a very weird competition where it's only basically a semi-final and final. Like, I think Gala beat Kelly Hearts to get into the final. I can't remember who Linlithgow played, but Linlithgow are playing Gala for it anyway. The weirdest thing is, Ben, it's also played a season behind. So this is actually last season's final rather than this season's final, if that makes sense.
All right, okay.
Yeah, so work live. It's the strangest competition I've ever known, and there's way too many cup competitions in the East as it goes, but yeah, the history of this cup competition goes back hundreds of years, and I think that's a lot of the reason why the East of Scotland has so many cup competitions, just because of the tradition behind them. And certainly when I was adding them to Football Manager, having to go back hundreds of years of history, typing all the winners and where they were and all this sort of stuff, it was a bit of a chore. And I had to go on some weird website of history of Scottish football or whatever website to get all that information. But I don't think this cup competition's added simply because it's too hard to work out. It really is too difficult to work out in terms of... I did previously, if you asked me a couple of years ago, I would know exactly how it worked, but I've totally forgot because I've had other things in my mind, obviously. But the structure, I think, is usually the winner of the Lone League, i.e. usually they go into League Two or whatever. Then one of the East of Scotland Cup, I think, I can't remember, Linlithgow won a cup last season, they get into it, and then it's usually a relegated team, i.e. Berwick Rangers were in it. And Edinburgh City have been in it for years as well. So don't ask me how it works now. But yeah, I think Stirling Uni and Bonnyrigg were in it at one point as well. So it's just it's so annoying to try and work out how it works. But yeah,
there we go. There's the good the summary from Chris there, then the City Cup that will take place today. So obviously that's that game between Spartans and Tyrone, Spartans and Grenadine will be an important one for the in the title race. I'm sure we'll find out what happens there, and we'll talk about it next week on the podcast. But that's pretty much it. We've been the best part of probably about an hour and a half at this point. We had to take a little break, which is rare for the podcast because obviously it's so much to talk about. But thanks for watching. If you want to get us on the platforms, it's check out at Official Catch Up on Twitter, all your podcast channels, etc., or get us on YouTube, Official Catch Up, hit the like, hit the subscribe button, do all that good stuff. It helps us out as a channel. We don't ask for anything in return, apart from a little like and sub on some of these platforms. So until next week, thanks for watching. We've managed to be 5 weeks on the spin on this podcast, so hopefully we'll be back next week for more non-league views and news. Cheers.